May 14, 1993, Gallup, New Mexico. A car pulls off the highway. A 19-year-old marathon runner cannot breathe. The doctors work on him for hours, and then they lose him. His name was Merrill Bahi. He was on his way to his fiancée's funeral. She had died of the same thing 3 weeks earlier. Nobody knew what it was yet. Today, 33 years later, it is back. And here is the thing. It is killing people in cabins and tool sheds and the kind of garage you keep, meaning to clean. From Armbrust USA, this is Vector, Season 1, Hantavirus. One story, told one episode at a time. This season, we answer one question. Why is it back? I'm Rachel Marin. With me is Seth Avery.
The CDC's first internal memo on it called the disease, quote, Unexplained Adult Respiratory Distress Syndrome, Navajo Nation, May 1993, end quote.
Right. They didn't have a virus. They didn't have a vector. They didn't have a treatment. They had bodies. Seth, paint the scene. May 1993. Where are we and what's happening?
We are in the Four Corners region of the American Southwest, the exact place where Arizona, Colorado, New Mexico, and Utah all touch. This is high desert, pinyon pine, juniper, sagebrush. Most of the land here is part of the Navajo Nation, the largest Native American reservation in the United States. On May 14, 1993, a young Navajo man named Merrill Bahi is in a car with his family. They're driving from the reservation toward the funeral of his fiancée, a young woman named Florina Woody. She had died unexpectedly a few weeks before. She was 21. She had been healthy. In the car, Merrill suddenly can't breathe. He's gasping. They pull over. The ambulance gets to him. He's rushed to the Indian Health Service Hospital in Gallup, New Mexico. The doctors there work on him for hours. Then they lose him.
He was 19, a marathon runner. He'd been training that week.
Right. And the doctors at the hospital, who already knew about Florina, look at each other and they realize, same age range, same community, same symptoms, same outcome. Healthy young person walks in, drowns in their own lungs, dies in hours. Twice in a month is not a coincidence.
And once the local doctors started asking around, they found out there were more.
There were more. Within days, the count was at 5 confirmed dead. All young, all Navajo, all otherwise healthy. The Indian Health Service called the New Mexico Department of Health. New Mexico called the CDC. By May 17, a CDC team was on a plane to Gallup.
This is the part where I always think the world changed and nobody quite noticed. Because the CDC team that landed in Gallup, that team, those weeks, that's the moment American public health discovered there was an entirely new disease of an entirely new category in our own country. And they had to figure it out in real time while people were still dying. A few of the details from those weeks never made the press. We'll come back to some of them.
The CDC team was led by a young epidemiologist named James Cheek. The press picked up the story almost immediately, and the press, being the press, called it the Navajo flu.
Which the Navajo Nation, very reasonably, found insulting and inaccurate. The disease wasn't a flu, and Navajo people weren't the cause, they were the victims.
The media also tried Four Corners disease. Same problem. The Four Corners region, including the city of Cortez, Colorado, started losing tourism overnight. Restaurants closed. Hotels emptied. Nobody wanted to go to a place named after a deadly illness.
So the CDC was under pressure to name this thing properly, quickly.
At first, the lab team at the CDC's Special Pathogens branch wanted to call it Muerto Canyon virus after a site near the outbreak. Muerto means dead. The Navajo Nation objected again. Massacre Canyon is the site of an 1805 atrocity in Navajo history. Naming a deadly virus after it was again the wrong move.
And so eventually, the virologists landed on a name that, honestly, I think is one of the most haunting names in the history of medicine.
They called it sin nombre, Spanish, without a name.
Without a name. That's the formal scientific designation. Sin nombre virus, SNV. You can look it up in a textbook today. The virus that earned its place in the medical literature by refusing to be named after a place or a people because every option was a wound.
And the family it belongs to, the genus it sits in, is called hantavirus, named for the Hantan River in Korea, where a related virus was first isolated in soldiers during the Korean War. Hantaviruses had been known to medicine since the 1970s, but every previous hantavirus caused kidney failure, mostly in Asia and Europe. Sin nombre was new. It attacked the lungs, and it killed young, strong, healthy people at a rate that, to put it bluntly, terrified the epidemiologists who flew out to Gallup.
The case fatality rate of the original outbreak was over 70%. Today, with modern intensive care, it's around 36%, which is still extraordinarily high. For comparison, the case fatality rate of seasonal flu is somewhere around 0.1%. Influenza kills 1 in 1,000. Hantavirus pulmonary syndrome kills more than 1 in 3.
There is a part of this story that I think doesn't get told enough. Once the CDC team got on the ground and started doing interviews, they did what good outbreak investigators do. They asked the local community.
And the Navajo elders had something to tell them.
The medicine men had been warning. For weeks, they had been saying that the conditions were right for a sickness, that the pinyon harvest the previous fall had been enormous, that the mouse population in the hogans, in the cabins, in the storage sheds, was the highest anyone could remember. And in Navajo tradition, that combination has a name. There is a teaching about a sickness that follows abundance, a sickness that comes from the mice.
And the CDC team, to their enormous credit, listened. They started trapping rodents. They started testing them. And what they found was that the deer mouse, a tiny brown and white mouse called Paramiscus maniculatus, was carrying the virus. The deer mouse population had exploded in the spring of 1993 because the winter of 1992 was an unusually wet El Nino year. More water, more pinyon pine cones, more food. 10 times the normal mouse population by spring.
10 times the mice meant 10 times the rodent droppings, 10 times the urine in the floorboards, 10 times the saliva on the food stores. And the virus is shed by deer mice in those fluids. The Navajo teaching had effectively predicted the conditions for an outbreak before the CDC had a virus to test for.
Indigenous knowledge meeting Western science in the most direct way possible. And the Western science worked because it listened.
Rachel, there's something I want to flag for the people hearing this. People are getting exposed to hantavirus right now. The risk is aerosolized particles, per the CDC. If you're cleaning out a cabin, or sweeping a shed, or anywhere rodents have been, you want a properly fitted N95 or a KN95.
And it's not actually easy in 2026 to get a quality American-made mask of that grade. There are a handful of manufacturers in the United States making them at any scale. One of them is Armbrust USA, who presents this podcast. They started in 2020 in Austin, Texas, because Americans couldn't get masks during the pandemic. They decided that wasn't going to happen again.
We wear Armbrust KN95s on this show. If you want one, or you want one for your cabin, your barn, your shed, anywhere rodents have been, go to vector.armbrustusa.com. They'll email you a code for 30% off anything they make.
vector.armbrustusa.com. Okay, let's talk about what hantavirus actually does inside your body.
A deer mouse, the reservoir species, lives in your shed, or your cabin, or your barn, or your storage closet. It is shedding virus in its urine, in its droppings, and in its saliva. You do not know this. The mouse does not look sick. Hantavirus doesn't really make the mouse sick. The mouse is a quiet, lifelong carrier. The droppings dry out, the urine evaporates, the dust on the floor, the dust in the rafters, the dust on the firewood that you bring in from the woodpile, all of it now contains virus particles. The next time you sweep, the next time you shake out a tarp, the next time you move boxes, you aerosolize the dust, you breathe it in.
And then for a week, you feel fine.
You feel fine for 1 to 5 weeks. The incubation is long. Then it starts like the flu. Body aches, fever, fatigue. You assume you caught something. You stay home for a day or two. Then suddenly, 4 to 10 days in, the lungs change. Your capillaries start leaking fluid into the air spaces. You can't oxygenate. You go from tired to I can't breathe in a matter of hours. By the time you're in the emergency room, the doctors are looking at a chest x-ray that looks like drowning, and the only treatment is intensive care and supportive oxygen. There is no specific antiviral. There is no cure. Roughly 1 in 3 patients dies.
And before we go any further, I want to be honest about something this show could very easily get wrong by accident, which is the scale of risk. Contracting hantavirus is extremely rare. Since the CDC started tracking it in 1993, there have been roughly 800 confirmed cases of hantavirus pulmonary syndrome in the United States. That is about 30 cases a year in a country of 330 million people. You are, statistically, around 10 times more likely to be struck by lightning than to ever contract hantavirus. So if you do not work with rodents, do not clean out long-abandoned cabins, do not handle wildlife, do not regularly enter spaces where mice have been nesting, your day-to-day risk is genuinely negligible. We want to say that plainly. The reason this show exists is not to make people afraid of a disease they are almost certainly never going to encounter. It is that the people who do encounter it tend to encounter it in the same handful of scenarios, every time. A cabin opened up for the season, a barn nobody has swept in a year, a storage shed with mouse droppings in the rafters. Inside those scenarios, the risk goes up sharply. Outside them, it does not. So the rule we want listeners to walk away with is simple. If you are not in one of those scenarios, this is not something to lose sleep over. If you are, take it seriously. That is the whole thing.
We will come back to this later in the season when we talk about what to actually do if you're worried about hantavirus exposure. For now, the takeaway. The original American hantavirus is a rodent disease. The way you get it is by breathing in dust from rodent-contaminated spaces, not from other people.
Until 2026.
Until 2026, which is the cliffhanger for episode 2.
Before we get there, one thing I want to do is talk about how this story landed in the American imagination. Because the 1993 outbreak happened in a very specific moment.
It happened during the rise of paranoid thrillers in pop culture. The early 1990s were the era of Andromeda Strain re-releases, Outbreak the movie, The Rise of the X-Files. Americans had just survived the AIDS crisis and were primed to believe that new viruses could appear from nowhere and that the government might be hiding things.
And almost immediately after the Four Corners outbreak, conspiracy theories started circulating that the United States government had engineered hantavirus, that the Indian Health Service had deliberately exposed Navajo patients, that the wet El Nino winter was caused by classified weather experiments. There was a real period in the mid-90s when AM radio and the early internet treated hantavirus as the centerpiece of a government bioweapons cover-up.
None of those particular theories holds up under any scrutiny. The virus is genetic. It has been in deer mice in North America for hundreds of years, probably longer. Researchers have found sin nombre antibodies in archived medical samples from the 1970s. People had likely been dying of hantavirus in small numbers in rural cabins for generations. The 1993 outbreak was the moment we developed the testing capacity to recognize it. Not the moment it appeared, which is all factually true. The climate that produced those theories, though, the suspicion, the convenient gaps, the timing, that climate is back. We will not pretend it isn't.
And then there's the more recent cultural afterimage, The internet eventually did to hantavirus what the internet does to everything. It made it a joke. There was a stretch, somewhere in the last decade, where anytime anyone yawned in public, somebody on the internet would respond with, "Ugh, that's hantavirus." It became a stock punchline, a way of saying, "My fear of obscure diseases is funny to me because nothing bad ever happens to anybody I know."
Which is fine, I guess, but also worth remembering. The marathon runner who died in Gallup, New Mexico, on May 14, 1993, was somebody people knew. The young woman whose funeral he was driving to, those people were real, and there is a community in the Four Corners that still carries the memory of those weeks.
Which brings us to where we are now. May 2026, the virus is back. In a small ski town called Mammoth Lakes, three people died in a four-month window in the spring of last year. Two of them did not have mice in their houses. They were cleaning cabins. Mammoth Lakes sits inside Mono County, which has quietly logged more cases of this disease than any other county in California. A few weeks later, a famous American actor was found dead in Santa Fe alongside the wife who had died, alone in their home, of the same thing we have been talking about for the last 15 minutes. He had Alzheimer's. He may not have known. And as we are recording this, there is a cruise ship in the Atlantic with 11 sick passengers and 3 dead, and the variant on board is the only hantavirus on Earth known to spread from person to person. 3 stories, 16 months. One question. Next week, we start in Mammoth Lakes.
I'm Seth Avery. Vector publishes new podcasts each week as the story develops. Subscribe so that you don't miss important updates.
And I'm Rachel Marin. If anything we covered today made you think differently about masks and respiratory protection, go to vector.armbrustusa.com, sign up for the newsletter, and get 30% off anything Armbrust makes. Vector is produced by Armbrust USA. This podcast is information only, not medical advice. Mask references are not FDA-evaluated claims. Consult a qualified healthcare professional for your situation. Sources at vector.armbrustusa.com. This is Vector. We'll see you next time.